שמו אלוהים בשמיים מהימה כי שמו אלוהים בשמיים מהימה ועל אורץ
Good evening. Thank you for coming. Just a reminder before we begin the class, we are pleased and excited to remind everyone that this week, Sunday night, we're having an incredible event. Rabbi Shalom Arush from Yerushalayim, the author of the book, The Garden of Amunah, that has sold over 1 million copies, a man that has inspired the Amunah in countless people across the world. The author of The Garden of Amunah and many other books that have inspired so many is coming to Los Angeles, and he's going to be speaking in the NASA Center. This is his only appearance in which his talk will be translated in English by Rabbi Laser Brody. There is another event in the Valley, but this is the only one that's going to be only a purely Hebrew event. This is the one that is going to be translated in English. This is at the NASA Center this Sunday night, November 3rd. Don't miss it. Please get your tickets. You can get it at mayon.com. Again, mayon.com. You can purchase your tickets online. Or you can get the tickets at nasa.org. Or you can pick them up in any of the Judaic stores. But hurry and don't wait because they're going to be going very quickly. This is in Ataraz. You can pick it up in Ataraz on Fairfax and Brenko's on Pico Boulevard. The Mitzvah store both on Beverly Boulevard and on Pico Boulevard. Mitzvah Land in the Valley on Ventura Boulevard. That's where you can pick up the tickets. So please go and get the tickets earlier by the door. They'll cost a little more. They're $15 if you buy them online, or if you buy them in the stores, they're only $10. So again, please get your tickets. This is an opportunity not to miss. Rabbi Arush doesn't come often. I don't know the last time he came. It's been a very long time ago. So now is the time to come hear him. It's going to be a beautiful event this Sunday night, November 3rd. Thank you. Just to announce the sponsors of the dedications for tonight. On to the dedications for tonight. We have Rabbi and Mrs. Nachman and Devoiri Kreiman. They are sponsoring the shiur in honor of their son, Yossi Kreiman Olav HaShalom, whose yard site is going to be this week on Friday, the 28th of Cheshvan. Yosef Olav HaShalom ben Nachman ber Sheyichya, may his neshama be elevated to incredible heights. May he channel lots of brachas to the mishpacha and everything, begashmis beruchnius. But mainly aliyah that we are waiting for and that the family is waiting for is the coming of Mashiach, and followed by Tchias HaMeisim, and Yossi should be back down in this world where he belongs, Baguv Gashmi, in a physical body. May you merit to see that happen, that fulfillment that you're so waiting for and so powerfully are connected to. May you merit to have that already before this Friday. And there should be only simcha from now on and nachas from all the children in Ein HaKlach. Another dedication tonight was by Velvel Zickman. This is an honor of two birthdays in his family. Yisroel David, two boys' birthdays. Yisroel David, whose birthday was today on Chav Dalet Cheshvan, and Herschel, whose birthday is going to be on Thursday, Chav Zayin Cheshvan. May they both have amazing good years, Shnas Bracha Natzlachas. May they grow in Torah and in Yerushamayim and in Chassidus and be great Lamdanim and great people. And I should grow up healthy and should be only simcha and happiness in the family. Thank you so much. Another dedication tonight was by my uncle, Rabbi Yoina Landau. And this is in honor of his father's yard site. Reb Doiv ben Reb Yoshua, whose yard site is the Chaf Hei tonight, Chaf Hei Cheshvan. May his neshama be elevated to very, very great heights. And channel lots of blessings down to you and to your family. He has left such a special mark on this community for those who knew him, Reb Erich Landau. So may his neshama be elevated and lots of brachas to you and nachas from the children, the family, and only good. Thank you so much and all for the dedications. This week's parsha is Parshas Toldos. The parsha begins with the word Ve'ele Toldos Yitzchak ben Avraham. And these are the offspring of Yitzchak, the son of Avram. And the question that is asked by the Mefarshim is, and it goes on to tell us about Yitzchak having children. Yitzchak has two children, Yaakov and Esau. First, Rivka was barren, Yitzchak and Rivka couldn't have any children. And then they davened to God, and Hashem gave them twins. And as the Torah tells us about the two boys and their lives, the very different lives that they led. The question over here is at the very, very opening phrase of Parashas Toldos. Ve'ele Toldos Yitzchak ben Avram. And these are the offspring of Yitzchak, the son of Avram. The word ve'ele means and these. So whenever you have the and at the beginning of a word, it means it's connecting this to something that's previous. Just like in English, and is never at the beginning of a paragraph or the beginning of a sentence. It was in the middle of a sentence. This and this. Vav means and. So it's a link to what's going on before. The question is, what's the connection? What is this and connecting to the beginning of a parasha? And these are the offspring of Yitzchak. What is the connection to what? So obviously, if you look at last week's parasha and see what it's connecting to. So there too, we're talking about the offspring. But over there, we're talking about the offspring of Yishmael. The Ele Toldos, Yishmael ben Avram, and these are the offspring of Yishmael, the son of Avram. So the question is, what kind of comparison? How can we compare the two, the Toldos of Yitzchak, the offspring of Yitzchak, to the offspring of Yishmael? Yishmael was a wicked person. How? And Yitzchak is a tzaddik. And the descendants of Yitzchak are the Jewish people. How can we compare what the Jewish people brought to the world? The Jewish people brought to the world light, wisdom, kindness, generosity, compassion, caring, sensitivity. And what did the descendants of Yishmael bring to the world? Chaos, madness, terror, fear. So what kind of connection? The B'nai Yishmael to the B'nai Yitzchak, Ve'ele Toldos. Make it stronger. The Gemara, the Rashi brings in the beginning of Parshas Mishpatim. It's a Medrash in the beginning of Parshas Mishpatim, Medrash Rabbah. Whenever it says, Ele, Pasal HaSarishayinim, it disconnects. Whenever it says, these are, it disconnects from what was before. These are, and not, meaning only these, and not what was mentioned earlier. When it says, Ve'ele, Moisif al HaRishayinim, it comes to add on what was before. So it's in a continuation and an addition to what was before. What kind of an addition, what kind of a continuation is there to the Toldos Yitzchak, the offspring of Yitzchak, to the Toldos Yishmael, to the offspring of Yishmael? It's a question. So the Medrash over there in the beginning of Shemois says that there is a connection, because Esav, Yishmael, had children, and they were wicked children. And Yitzchak also had children that they were wicked. And Esav was a son of Yitzchak. So true, Esav gave birth to a tzaddik, but he also gave birth to a rasha. So the Ve'ela Toldos Yitzchak, and these are the offspring of Yitzchak, and connecting it in connection and continuation to what says in the previous parsha, meaning the Vav, is a continuation of wicked children that were born to Yitzchak because of the wicked children that were born to Yishmael. But then the Medrash says, but there was also a tzaddik. So the Medrash says, that's why the Torah puts the word toldos without a Vav. It's missing the second Vav. Between the Dalet and the Saf, there is no Vav, which the word toldos could have been filled with two Vavs. It's showing that we're referring to not all the offspring of Yitzchak. We're speaking of some of the offspring, half of his offspring. Esav is a continuation to the previous children, the wicked children born to Yishmael. However, Yaakov, he's not included. That's what the Medrash says. Similar to that idea, the Al Shech HaKadosh, even though he does not bring the Medrash, he explains the relationship. He asks, what's the Ve'ela Toldos? What is the, and these are the children of Yitzchak, continuation to the children of Yishmael. And he says something like this, something very, very beautiful. He says that we know that Hashem gave the Torah to the world. God waited for over 2,500, or close to 2,500 years to give the Torah. Since the purpose of creation is the giving of the Torah, Matan Torah, why did Hashem wait so long until he gave the Torah to the world? He should have given immediately. And he explains, really, it was meant to be given immediately. It was meant to be given to Adam, to Adam and Eve. However, the problem is that Adam HaRishon sinned, And as a result of the sin, there came a contamination into the human beings. The snake contaminated Chava. He injected his venom into Chava, and he brought death to the world. But primarily, he brought a spiritual darkness into the world. He contaminated the human psyche. And therefore, all the descendants and everything in the world, it impacted, since the human being is the central nerve of all of creation, it impacted all of creation. There is a mixture of tov v'ra, of good and bad in the entire world. The Torah could not be given to the world until we extract the negativity, what the Gemara calls the zuhama, until we take out the filth, until we take out this germ that the snake, this venom that the snake had imparted into Chava, embedded into all of creation. It had to be cleansed at least from the Makablei Torah, from those who are receiving the Torah, from the nation that was going to receive the Torah, from Am Yisrael. And therefore, the Torah could not have been given till 2,500 years later. It took that amount of time. When did the purification begin? When did the extraction begin? It began with Avram. Because until Avram Avinu, we see the opposite effects. Until Avram, the first Jew, we see the denigration of the human being. The human being falling and falling lower and lower and lower, as we see right after the Adam and Chava ate from the sin, they had their children, and immediately in those children, in Cain, we see the effects of the sin, because jealousy, greed, suddenly overtook Cain, and he killed his brother Abel. Cain killed Hevel out of anger, out of his jealousy. Obviously, that comes from the venom of the snake. And then we see continuation. Mankind is falling and falling till they become corrupted so bad beyond repair, beyond tshuva, that God has to wipe away all of the humanity, everybody off the face of the earth. A global cleansing. One family barely survived. And then after that, we would think the world would learn a lesson, but we continue the corruption. And we have the Tower of Babel. The world rebelled against God, led by the man whose very name represents rebellion, the man called Nimrod. And then you have the corruption of Sodom and Amorah, you have the corruption of the ancient Egyptians. A very, very, very corrupt world. But there was one man who began this to purify himself, and that is Avram Avinu, who recognized God. And the Al-Shech HaKadosh says like this. Al-Shech is a 16th century scholar living in the ancient city of Tzfas, who wrote a pirush on the Torah, an amazing pirush on the Torah, mainly homiletical, based on drash and remez and a little bit Kabbalah. He lived in Tzfas at the same time of the Holy Arizal. So he writes like this. He says that the purification of Avram Avinu came in stages. First thing is a lot of the removal of the negativity in Avram's neshama came about when Avram passed the 10 tests. As he passed, he went through Asar Nisyonis. Avram was tested 10 times. Through those Nisyonis, he separated the shmutz, the filth of the snake, from within him. But that wasn't enough. Because even after he removed that, even after he purged himself through these and passed the tests and flying colors, there needed to be more tikkun. Hashem gave him the tikkun of Bris Milah. Bris Milah is also the peeling away of the klipa, peeling away the negativity, removing the orla, removing that which is unholy on him. Then, continuation to that, the birth of Yitzchak was going to be born as the first Jew, had to be pure, the first Jew being born a Jew, had to be pure with the ultimate purity. That's why Avram, in preparation to the birth of Yitzchak, a few things happened. Number one, he had to get rid of some subtle imperfections, some subtle negativity that was still embedded in his psyche, which he himself couldn't extract, that had to come out of him. And the mashal is given like a person when they're sweating. When a person has a fever or a cold, some kind of a germ, some kind of a virus, it is very good if you sweat. Because in the sweating, the body is ejecting through the sweat. It is ejecting the bug, the germ, whatever it is that's causing this illness, the sickness. So too, it says about Avram that Avram had to sweat out the klipa, take out the germs from inside of him. And that was the reason why, before Yitzchak could be born, Avram had to have another child. And the child that was born was Yishmael. Yishmael was the negativity that was embedded in Avram's soul that was extracted from him. As the Gemara says, Avram, sheyatzim emenu Yishmael. Yishmael came out of him. And the Gemara says that that is the zuhama, that is the filth that was there in Avram from the sin of the snake that went out in the creation of Yishmael. Now Avram remains clean because he extracted Yishmael. And Yishmael had to be born before Yitzchak, so we can take that filth out. And Yitzchak can be born from a pure father. But even that is not enough, he says. Another thing was that Yitzchak, Avram can only have Yitzchak when he was 100 years old. 100, the Gemara says, when a person comes to the age of 100, ki'ilu meis u'batal min ha'olam. He's as if he died and he's batal of the world. Doesn't mean that the person is, when they say they're dead, it doesn't mean they're good for nothing, God forbid. It means that their physical body has sort of like ceased. They're beyond, they're a spiritual being. Once a person is alive, after 100, they're completely, the body is not that, is not strong anymore. It's a pure spiritual state. So he says, when Avram gave birth to Yitzchak, the Yetzahara was not there even one tiny bit. There was no impurity, nothing negative in Avram's thoughts because Avram was beyond, there was no Yetzahara, he was already 100 years old. And the same as he says in regards to Sarah, an amazing thing. Sarah was, as the Pasuk says, Chad aliyos l'Sarah oirach kanashim. Sarah was already past menopause. Her menstruation, her dam nida, the blood of nida had stopped. The nida is from the curse of the snake. As we know that the blood of the nida, God says be'etzav tel dubanim, and the curses that was given to Sarah, to Chava, to Eve, part of it was that she would menstruate. So, and then the blood, what is the idea of menstruation? Is that there is a mixture of good and bad. There is good blood that goes into production of a child, and there is extra blood, which blood means life, life that can enliven something negative, something that isn't good, and that's the source of the tumah. Sarah already ended. She had no negative blood. That means the same idea, she was clean already. And from a mother that was perfectly clean, and from a father that was perfectly clean, little Yitzchak was born, pure, pure, holy, without any trace of Klipa inside of him. But even that was not enough. Yitzchak still had to be sifted, because until we're going to produce the Jewish people, it had to be sifted and sifted and sifted again. Yitzchak himself had to go through the Akedah before he can have children. So Yitzchak had the Akedah, and Akedah was total Mesiras Nefesh. He was pulled out, laid out on the altar. He was ready to give his life. He was sanctified with the sanctification of a korban, to the point that we see this week in the parasha. God does not allow him to go out of Eretz Yisrael. He is holy with pristine heavenly holiness. Especially, it's a very interesting thing. It says, I saw this last week in the Shach Ala Torah that he brings, that Yitzchak, he asked the question, how come Yitzchak was not by the Sarah's funeral? It doesn't mention Yitzchak by the Levaya. Interesting thing, last week it says, Vayavin Avram, Lispoidu l'Sarah l'Fkai, so Avram comes to mourn and to eulogize Sarah. Yitzchak is not to be found. What happened with Yitzchak? So he says Yitzchak wasn't there because Yitzchak, was in the intensive care unit. He says, Avram, according, he brings, I don't know from who, but he brings that, some say that Avram actually performed the shechita. He did shechted Yitzchak. He cut through his throat, and he cut the two pipes, which really makes a person a treifa. He can't live. But the malachim came, and the first responder angels, and they rushed Yitzchak into Gan Eden, and over there he was treated until they brought him out. For 3 years, Yitzchak was in Gan Eden. Was being rehabilitated, came back to life. So we understand that Yitzchak, it's almost like Yitzchak ceased to live, and now he's a new being. And where is he? He's in Gan Eden. He's coming from Gan Eden. He's on the level of Adam Arishan before the sin. And only in that state can he marry Rivka. And he gets married, Rivka, and they're ready to have children. He's ready to create the tzaddik, but still there might be something hidden in the subconsciousness, there might still be something. The venom of the snake permeated them so deeply on a cellular level, went down into every cell, into every, into the kishkas, into the deepest place, in the deepest recesses of the human psyche. So therefore the cleansing had to be even stronger. And that's why Rivka gives birth now to twins. Esav and Yaakov. And what did Esav do? So the pasuk says, Esav took out all the sediments of Yitzchak. Number one, he took out, he comes from the psoles, as the Gemara says, Yitzchak, sheyatzam emena Yishmael. We can hardly call Esav. Yitzchak, that Esav comes out of him, we can hardly call him a child. He's like extracting, he's like we said earlier, he's sweating it out. And Esav is being born from the negativity, the psoles that might be within holy Yitzchak. But more than that, the Medrash says that Esav was red. The Pasuk says he was a red, he was born red like a beet. Why was he so red? Because he was drinking his mother's blood. Which blood? The blood of menstruation. The dam nida that was in Rivka, that's what Esav was drinking in the mother's womb. So he's filled with the psoles. He's filled with that extra stuff, with the excessive impurities. Yaakov, on the other hand, was burned pure tzaddik. And therefore the Al Sheikh says, comes out, that that's the meaning of what the Pasuk is saying. The Eila told us Yitzchak ben Avram, and these are the toldos, and these are the offspring of Yitzchak, the son of Avram, in continuation to toldos, Yishmael ben Avram, the offspring of Yishmael, the son of Avram, of last week's parasha. Just like over there, Yishmael came out of the tzaddik, so that the tzaddik can be purified and remain clean and holy. And without any trace of evil, without any trace of the snake inside of him. So too, the Eila told us Yitzchak also produces a Rasha. It's a continuation, a wicked person, so that the purity of Yaakov, who is pure, there isn't going to be any tiny bit of klipa inside of him. Yaakov, we know already. What do we know about Yaakov? Yaakov ishtam. Yaakov is the wholesome person, complete. Pure from the inside to the outside. And Yaakov, the Gemara says, by him already three generations, Paska Zayamasam, there was no Zahama, there was no more impurity left. He has 12 tribes, they're all tzaddikim, they're all holy, godly people. And that's the connection. So the Tovet, and that's why the Pasuk starts with a Vav, because this is a continuation to the previous children. The problem over here is that according to that, comes out it's a little distasteful. That toldos Yitzchak, we call the parashas toldos. What are the toldos that we're talking about? Who are the toldos? The toldos is wicked, or Russia. The toldos we're referring to is Esav. We're not even talking about Yaakov. Again, it implies the same from the Medrash. The Al Sheikh is going along the lines of the Medrash. But that's difficult to understand. I mean, the primary toldos of Yitzchak is Yaakov, is a tzaddik. Rashi says that. Ve'ela toldos Yitzchak, Yaakov. Rashi says, Yaakov v'Esav amurim b'parasha. Yaakov and Esav that are stated in the parasha. And Rashi goes so far, and Rashi puts Yaakov before Esav. Even though the order of the birth, Rashi should have said, Esav the Yaakov amurim b'parasha. Esav and Yaakov. No, he puts Yaakov before Esav. So why does he put Yaakov before Esav? It's because we understand, because Yaakov is the primary child of Yitzchak. So, but according to this pshat, the whole toldos Yitzchak, the offspring of Yitzchak, which is in continuation to before, it's only the offspring that is negative children in order that Yaakov should be pure. So it's true, it has a good intention. The reason why he had these unholy, wicked people were born so that they can extract all the unholy and leave him pure. But still, the toldos, according to that, is negative. The other thing, other question that's asked over here, the Tzemach Tzedek asks these questions on the Al Sheikh's Pirish and on the Medrash. And he says, and another thing that bothers him, he says, according to that, when we say the Eila, the Vav over here, comes to Moisev al Rishayim, it comes to add on the before, this addition is a negative addition. We're adding more evil in the world. Not only do we have a monster, Yishmael, who brought such devastation, suffering, continuing until this day, such horrific horror and suffering that we seem not to be able to even get our to get our minds around, to grapple with the evil that has been this coming from Yishmael. And not only that, but in addition to that, we also had Esav. When we look in the long history of Esav, we see the brutality of the descendants of Esav. So, I mean, what are we saying? Ve'ela, and these are Moisev al Rishayin, and this adds on what was before. It's a very negative addition. It's not really, we shouldn't call it a haysafa, an adding. It's adding more corruption, more evil in the world. Therefore, the Tzemach Tzedek says, I like better the pirush of the holy Ma'ir Einayim. Ma'ir Einayim is Rav Nachum of Chernobyl, the great disciple of the holy Magid. He's the eldest of the disciples, the oldest disciple of the Magid of Mizrich, the successor of the Baal Shem, the third generation Hasidic master, the holy Rav Nachum of Chernobyl. In his book Ma'ir Einayim, so he learns, Ve'ele Tolos Yitzchak, and these are the offspring of Yitzchak, Moisef al Rishayim, we're adding something good. At this point, Kedusha, the world of holiness, is preparing for a super magnificent addition. Something is being added to Kedusha, a great broadening of the energy of holiness. That's the meaning of the Eile Moisef al Rishayim. Now holiness is being developed. Until now, until this point, we have Avram in the world. Avram gave birth to Yitzchak. We had 10 tests. We have Akedas Yitzchak. We have Sarah Imenu. We have a beautiful world of holiness that is forming. But at this junction, right now over here, Ve'ela Moisef, we're adding Al Rishonim. Something is being added. What is being added over here to holiness? Not only is it an addition, but it's an addition that's far greater than whatever we had before. Meaning we're not adding a little bit, we're adding more than what we've had. Through what? What is the addition? So he says, well, this Eila Todos Yitzchak comes right at the junction between the story of the offspring of Yishmael, Yishmael's children, and we have the birth of Esav. So we're right in the middle, smack in the middle between Yishmael and Esav. And what's so great about that? What's great about that is we begin the rectification and the transformation of the Gentile world, of the unholy world. See, till now we were developing Kedusha, but Kedusha remained within the realms of Kedusha. Now, at this junction in Parshas Toldos, through the birth of the Toldos Yitzchak, who's going to be Yaakov is going to be the one who's going to make a tikkun and a fixing in Yaakov and Yishmael and in Esav. And that's what Rashi means, Yaakov v'Esav ha'amurim b'parsha. That Yaakov, who does a tikkun on Esav, that is stated in the parsha, that we're going to learn about in the parsha, the tikkun of Esav. And when we do a rectification, when we do a fixing of the world at large, of the entire human population, universal human population, and we're not only within our own boundaries of the Jewish people, but we bring about a tikkun in the world, in all the nations, and we'll see soon what the nations represent. As we're going to see soon, what we're primarily talking about is an internal tikkun, an internal rectification within ourselves that is impacting globally, that is affecting the entire world, causing a purification in the Esav world and in the Yishmael world. This happens now. And when we do that, we have a tremendous Esav. We have a tremendous addition. Because holiness is enriched when Klipa, when the unholy, is elevated, when the unholy is sublimated. The reason for that is, just briefly, is an amazing idea. And we spoke about this briefly at different shiurim, but it's something that would be important for tonight's class. And that is that Kedusha traces its origins in something that is called Olam HaTikun, a world of rectification. Klipa, the unholy, everything that's negative and unholy and dark in this world, traces its roots in the supernal world that precedes Olam HaTikun, the world of rectification. It's rooted in what's called Olam HaTohu, the world of chaos. And the world of chaos is much higher, way, way, way above, incomparably higher, way, way above to the Olam HaTikun, to the world of Tikun. The world of Tikun is just a minuscule crumb in comparison to the energy that there was in the world of Tohu. That explains actually the question why it's so hard to overcome Yetzer Hara, why the forces of evil are so powerful, and the forces of holy sometimes don't seem to be so mighty, so powerful and so strong. because Klipa, the unholy, originates in a very, very, very powerful, intense world. What is this idea? So this is a concept. It's a concept discussed a lot by the Arizal. That is, the first idea is, we mentioned this many times, everything in the world has to derive energy from holiness. Klipa doesn't have anything of its own. Klipa gets its sustenance, its life force from Kedusha. What's its source? What's its power? There are sparks of holiness that are embedded in the Klipa, in the unholy, in the forces of darkness, and that's what's giving them their life. There are sparks. The sparks are sparks of Hashem. They are trapped. They're in a trapped, egolistic state. Our job in the world is to extract these sparks, to elevate, to purify the world. Where do these sparks come from? How did sparks get tangled in the unholy? So the idea is that there's a concept called Shfiras HaKelim, the shattering, a primordial collapse of spiritual energy, of godly energy. What's the idea? The Medrash says, when Hashem created the world, Hashem created worlds and He destroyed them. He created worlds and He destroyed them. What does that mean? So the Arizal explains it doesn't mean that there was a physical world before that God destroyed, that there was a previous life of a world that existed. No, that's not what it means. When it says Hashem was creating worlds, it's referring to mystically this world of Tayu. What is the idea of this world of Tayu? Hashem emanated, see, the whole system of godly light coming to the world is that Hashem's light is filtered through a series of containers. We call them kelim, vessels, spheros, attributes. And Hashem's attribute of kindness, Hashem's attribute of judgment, severity, chesed, gevura, din, rachmem, chachma, bina, all the attributes that give some form and some character to the otherwise indefinable energy. Okay? So initially, Hashem emerged a world where He made vessels to receive the light, but the vessels and the energy that came into it were incompatible. The energy that flowed into the vessels was super intense, super powerful. The vessels couldn't handle them, and therefore they shattered. That's called Shfiras HaKelim. That doesn't mean that world that God destroyed. It wasn't an accident. It was on purpose. Because without that, there could not be a world of darkness like we have today. It would be impossible for there to be things, creatures and beings that deny their relationship with God, deny that they have any, that they come from Hashem. It'd be impossible. Because if creation would have been made in a way where creator and creation have a direct connection, where the creation is just evolving from Hashem, even if it would be a chain-like progression of millions of billions of steps of Hashem dimming His light, we would never reach a creation so corrupt, a creation so disconnected from its source. So in order for that to happen, we spoke about another shiurim, there had to be a shvira, there had to be a breaking of the vessels. Now, those sparks, those vessels that fell, what happened to the energy went back up to its source. It was reabsorbed in Hashem, but the vessels fell. But since the vessels touched that light, they have a trace of that powerful energy, of the oirois de tohu, of the lights of the world of Tayu. When they fell down into into everything unholy in the world. Then, after that, to actually create the world, Hashem brought about, emanated new vessels, new containers. These vessels are called the vessels of Tikkun. They are broad vessels. But, on the other hand, the energy that was put into them was very, very minute. Very, very minor, very, very dim, a very contracted light. Far, far, far inferior to the previous light. As we said, incomparably lower than the light, not just in quantity, but mainly in quality, a completely lower, lower, lower revelation. And this, of course, was able to be contained in the vessels. And from there, Hashem created the entire realms of holiness. All the malachim and all the neshamas, everybody that's holy and connected to God comes from the world of Tikkun. Everything in the world that is corrupt, everything that is messed up in this world, is in a broken state, is because it comes from the shattered world that's broken. But they possess those sparks because there's a little bit of trace, a spark of Toyo. And when we can elevate a spark from the Klipadiga world and return it back to its source, so when we elevate it, when we extract the spark goes back up to its original source in the world of Tayu, and it draws forth the original Oireis to Tayu, that very, very powerful illumination. And where do we bring it down? Into our vessels of Tikkun. And our vessels are able to hold it because we did the work. Because we worked and extracted it, we are strong and the vessels of Tikkun are able to contain this massive, intense light of the world of Tayu. And that's really the whole purpose of creation. is that we, the recipients, those that are the beneficiaries of tikkun, and they are the souls and the Jewish souls, should come down into a world of Tayu. And the world of Tayu includes many things. It includes our physical bodies, because our physical bodies are apart from the physical matter, which is part of the Tayu, the shards of Tayu, because it's naturally in a state of klipa, in a state of unholiness. Our animal soul, we all have an animal consciousness. That animal consciousness is a broken consciousness. It's disconnected from God, so it's also connected to the klipa coming from the world of Tayu. And besides from that, all physical matter that we see, everything in this physical world, all stuff, everything, animals, trees, even earth itself, everything in this world is connected to are all from the shattered world of Tayu. It's all pieces from that shattered world. And primarily, it's the Gentile nations. They are all the inheritors of the energy of Tayu. The Jewish people have within themselves a soul that is from Tikkun. And what is our avoda? Our avoda is to enter into the world and elevate sublimate. How do we do that? When we take the things in this world and we use them for Kedusha, we reveal their connection to Hashem. That's how we do that sublimation, elevating the spark. When we do that, we are enriched with incredible enrichment. Because when we can draw down the lights of Tayu into our vessels, wow, it's the life force that we experience is boundless. Now, the main tikkun that we have to make, as we said before, is in the Gentile nations, primarily in Esav and in Yishmael. Because Esav and Yishmael are the two dominating forces of the Gentile nations. Half the world population is under the dominion of Yishmael, and half of the world population is under the dominion of Esav. Esav represents, generally, if we want to look at it as, Esav is the European Christian world, and Yishmael is the Muslim world. And that's the two dominating religions and the two dominating forces amongst the Gentile nations. So our fixing of the world implies fixing Esav and Yishmael, and automatically that will bring about a tikkun in the entire world and all the nations that come from them or related to them or influenced by Esav and Yishmael. And that's the meaning, as we're saying over here, that at this point, when we're going to do, when Yaakov was born, and Yaakov is Baal Olam HaTikun, he's the man of the world of Tikkun, he is much weaker than his brother. That's why he's born second. Esav is born first, because Esav is Benoi HaGadol, he's the great son. Great son doesn't only mean he's the older one, he's the one connected, that's a supreme, intense world, and the world that comes first, that's why Esav was Bechor, because he was born first. Yaakov is Katan, small, very small in comparison to Esav, but Yaakov has the wisdom, he has the knowledge, and he has the purpose and the mission, and the ability to purify Esav, to elevate Esav from his fallen state. Now, Esav and Yishmael, they represent, as we said earlier, they're the two forces. But why Esav and Yishmael? What, in terms of fallen energy, collapsed, broken energy, what are they? So the idea is like this. The difference between, we see Esav came from Yitzchak, and Yishmael came from Avram. We know that Avram is chesed. Avram is kindness. Yitzchak is gevura. Yishmael is a corruption of midas ha-chesed. See, the two main forces in creation is the attribute of kindness and the attribute of judgment. The attribute of kindness, of love, and the attribute of discipline, might, awe, and fear. The Yishmael is a shattering of the love. What does that mean? Yishmael's main challenge in his life, his difficulty, what he was dealing with, was he had perverted loves. He had a perversion of Avram's chesed. He had all kinds of desires, lusts, and cravings to have, which represents the idea of adultery and promiscuity. This is the challenge of Yishmael, and that's the challenge, the primary challenge of his descendants. Esav's challenge is, as we know, Esav was al char b'chatichya, you will live by your sword. Esav is a murderer, he's a killer, he enjoys spilling blood, he gets a chayus, he gets a thrill out of cruelty, out of brutality, out of his murderous ways. Esav and Yishmael. It's interesting. The way we encounter Yishmael today and Esav today, it almost seems to a certain degree that they flipped roles. Yishmael seems to be more, at least outwardly, we don't know what's going on the inside, but at least outwardly they seem to represent a more tzniestig culture, a more modest culture, and more refrained in their realm of morality at that end, but they're murderous and full of rage. And Esav seems to be the ones that are frivolous and free and sinful when it comes to matters of modesty. But yet, the Kabbalists tell us that it's not that way. That Yishmael is the collapsing of Avram's energy. And we see it also by Matan Torah, we see this. I mean, this idea. It says when Hashem came to give the Torah, he says he went to Yishmael and he offered them the Torah. It says, the Pasuk says, Hashem is Sinai Bo, Hashem came from Sinai. V'zorach mi Seir, and he shone forth from Seir. And v'hoifiyam har paran, he came from har paran. And the Medrash says, Rashi brings it, that when Hashem came to give the Torah, first he went to the Bnei Esav. He went to the children of Esav, and he offered them to the Torah. And Esav said, what does it say in it? And Hashem said, it says, Lo yisirtzach. So they said, thanks, but not thanks. We cannot keep the Torah. Our entire thing, our energy in this world, our father's blessings to us, was a charba chetichya. You live by the sword. What do you mean? We're going to give up killing? We can't do that. He went to Yishmael, and he offered them the Torah. And Yishmael said, I can't. What does it say? And Hashem said, Lo yisinaf. Do not commit adultery. And Yishmael says, we can't. This is what we're all about. This is our very fabric of our being. So you see that this is what they represent. Yishmael is a falling of Avram's energy. And that's why the last words in last week's parasha is Al Pnei Kol Echav Nafal. It's a shvira. It's a shattering of the energy of Chesed, but it's misinterpreted, misguided, misused. It's a perverted type of love. Instead of love of God, instead of doing goodness and kindness, it's a perversion of love. Esav is an energy of a perversion of discipline. And therefore he's full of rage, anger, jealousy, hatred, and murderous, and a murderer. Now, very important to understand that when we say Esav Yishmael, we're not pointing fingers to nations and say this nation or that nation. Of course, every nation is an embodiment of a certain energy, but then these energies are also within us. There's an expression that goes, Hagoya shebekir b'cha. The Gentile, the guy that's Bekir Bacha, that's in you. We have our, because again, we said earlier, we are from the world of Tikkun. Our neshama is from the world of Tikkun. But our animal consciousness is a mixture of every kind of klipa that there is in the world. We have a little Esav inside, a little Yishmael inside, and everybody's chemistry is different. Some people are more, their Yetzahara is more in the matters of Yishmael, more in dealing with controlling certain urges and passions. And other people's Yetzahara is more with anger and cruelty, and they become abusive and things like that. So this is really a challenge. We're not talking about what the world has to fix. It's what we have to fix and within ourselves, in which we rectify the entire world. However, when we bring about this rectification in the Esav and in the Yishmael, then we are touching upon the energies of Esav and Yishmael and in their quintessential source up there above, and adding an enrichment to Kedusha that is beyond, beyond, beyond. And this is the meaning, as we said, Ve'elem, Moisef, Al HaRishayim. Now we're going to add. Now why at this point are we adding? Why is it happening right now? So first of all, just looking at the parasha, we see that there's a change in Yitzchak's life. Just Yitzchak. Eila told us Yitzchak also is explained by many of the Mefarshim. It means these are the happenings of Yitzchak, not just the offspring of Yitzchak. If we look at Yitzchak himself, we see that his life is changing at this junction. Until now, Yitzchak, what do we know about Yitzchak? Yitzchak is born by a big tzaddik and a tzaddikus. He has, by very righteous people, saintly people, they give them a bris milah. And then Yitzchak is taken to the Akedas Yitzchak. He's almost slaughtered for God. Then he's put on, and then he's in Gan Eden. Then he's davening in the field. He's looking for a Mashiach, and the Mashiach comes about miraculously. He doesn't even have to do anything. Yitzchak is some angelic being. He's soaring in the heavens above. He's holy, holy. There's no contact with the world. At this point, what happens in this week's parasha? Here we're talking about Yitzchak is married, and he's going to have children. Children already means impacting the world. After that, he goes down. There's a famine in the land. He goes down to the land of Gerar. He wants to go to Mitzrayim. Why does he want to go to Egypt? Because he wants to do a tikkun in Mitzrayim, just like Avram went down to Egypt. So he falls to follow, and Hashem says, you can't go down to Egypt, but stay in the land of Gerar. He stays in the land of Gerar. He makes contact with Avimelech. You see him dealing. He becomes a businessman, becomes very wealthy. Everybody's respecting him. And then after that, he goes on to bless his children. And we know that the reason why he wanted to bless his son Esau, even though Yaakov is so much greater than Esau, Esau was a wicked person. So it says because he knew who Esau was, at least by that time, and he wanted to bless him because he wanted to be mesaking him. He wanted to fix him. Because he knew the secret that we had just spoken about before, that Esau contains within himself powerful sparks of the world of Tayu. And Yitzchak wanted to fix it and extract those sparks and elevate Esau, make a mensch out of Esau. And he figured that if he's going to bless him, the blessings of Yitzchak were going to be such powerful, he's going to draw down such powerful godly illumination into Esau's soul, and that's going to evoke and it's going to empower the good potential that's in him, and he's going to transform Esau into a tzaddik. Instead, when we say extracting a spark, it doesn't mean extracting the spark and running away from it. Extracting a spark means allowing the spark to come out of the klipa that's covering it and allowing it to manifest and to take over the being who has that spark, to reveal the godliness in any given thing. So when Esau stops being a corrupt person and he uses his intensity, his gevura that he has for good things, like his father Yitzchak, that would mean extracting a spark. And that's what Yitzchak wanted to do with him. So you see that at this point, Yitzchak is dealing with the world. However, we know that it was a mistake. Esau was unrehabilitatable. You couldn't fix him. He is fixable, but he's not fixable through a direct. If Yitzchak would have been giving him a surge of extra power, Esau would have used that power in the negative. He would have further denigrated himself. So that wouldn't work. Therefore, Rivka knows that she has to direct Esau's blessings. Not that Rivka is Esau's mother as well. She cares about him as well. She wants him to have his tikkun, but she knows that the tikkun of Esau is going to come through, it has to be redirected. That Yitzchak has to give that energy to Yaakov, and Yaakov is now going to take that power and rectify his brother Esau. So you see the change. Till now we're dealing with Olam HaKadusha, pure holiness. At this point, we're exiting the world of holiness, and we're going. And Yitzchak himself is going to deal with the unholy world. But Yitzchak is not the one who can accomplish it. Yitzchak is not the one who's going to complete that job. It's Yaakov's job to do the complete tikkun. And that's why, what's the story of Yaakov, right after the blessings were given to him, in which those blessings are empowering him to fix the world. These are Esau's blessings. It's a blessing of the world of Tayu. Hashem is, but it was given to Yaakov to empower him to be able to engage, to confront, to wrestle with the klipa, with the unholy from that Tayu Diga world. What do we find right away at the end of the parasha? Where does Yaakov go? He leaves the land of Israel. He leaves the enclave of holiness. He leaves his holy, comfy zone where he's so comfortable with Kedusha, where he sat learning in the yeshivas of Shem Ve'Ever for such a long time. And where does he go? He goes out to face the cold, big, mean world, cruel world. He goes to his uncle Lavan, the man, the artist of deception, of lies. And he has to deal with him. And he has to beat him and all this great swindler. And what does he do? He extracts the sparks that are in Haran. Haran is a place that angers God. It's a very dark place. It's definitely the domain of Esau. It's the domain of unholiness. And Yaakov gets, what is he? He converts. The sheep of Lavan becomes his sheep. The Lavan's daughters become his wives. Lavan's grandchildren are now his grandchildren. Everything he extracts. And then on the way back, where is he? He sends Malachim to Esau. Why did he send these angels to angels? To rectify Esau. The point over here was that he was going to do a tikkun onto Esau. He sends the Malachim to purify Esau. It wasn't just a mission, you know, it looks to our eyes, a physical mission. He went and he wanted, because he knows that the ultimate geula can only come, redemption, Mashiach will only come through the conversion of darkness to light. We see Mashiach himself, Mashiach's neshama. Where does Mashiach come from? He comes from Moabite, he comes from Moab. He comes from the klipa. It's the conversion when you take darkness, it's hapcha chashuchel and aura. When we take darkness and transform it to light, that is the light of Mashiach. You see it in the whole story of Mashiach. So Yaakov now knows he wants to go to the Geula. He thinks we're ready. So he's sending the messengers for the rectification of Esau. And he has an effect on Esau. He changes him. Because Esau is coming against him with anger that was boiling in his ugly heart for 20 years. He has this animosity and this rage. And you never wanted to mess. One person you didn't want to mess with is with Esav. I mean, this is the man who, when he was born with anger in his face. He was red, full of intense rage. And can you imagine when he's ticked off, when he's angry, and the anger that was brewing in his heart, Yaakov thought that he would forget after 20 years, but he didn't. He just gets stronger and stronger. He was running towards him, and the last minute miracles, he grabs him, he hugs him, and he kisses him. What happened? What happened to that rush? What happened to that hatred? The answer is Yaakov affected him. Yaakov elevated him. Yaakov brought Esav to the Mashiach Dig estate, where there's a tikkun olam, a tikkun in the world, and even Esav is nesakin. And Esav is up there in heaven at that moment. Problem is that it was not a pnimius that could change. Esav is in that holy state only for a brief moment because Yaakov picked him up. But Esav on his own is still way, way below. He hasn't fixed himself at all. So now begins the work of the Jewish people. Over thousands of years in which we traverse the lands of Esav, and we slowly tinker with Esav, very, very carefully, very quietly, trying not to get our big brother Esav angry. But we work our way through Esav, and we change Esav's way of thinking. We change his attitudes. We change his entire perception of life and of existence. We cause that internal change in Esav, little by little. And when Mashiach comes, we have a complete different Esav. That is the avoda of, and so it's Yaakov who's going to do it. And that's why it's Ve'ela Toldos. Right over here is the Ve'ela Mosef al HaRishonim. Over here we have Esav. Now, here's an amazing thought. This addition that Yaakov makes on Esav, into Kedusha, through the conversion of both Esav and Yishmael into holiness, the pasuk we said before, it's all hinted to in the vav. What do we know? How do we know that we have a hisafa? We have now an addition because it says ve'ele. The vav is a vav hamoisef. The vav is the vav that adds. What is the meaning that the vav is the vav? The vav, that's the vav of Yaakov. Yaakov is connected to the letter vav because the Zohar says that the vav do'is emes. The vav is a letter of truth. The letter of truth, it means truth. Yaakov, we know, is Emes. Avram is Chesed, kindness. Yitzchak is Gevura. Yaakov is Midas Emes. He's in the center, because we know that there's no Emes in the extremes. The center is Emes. Yaakov is Teferes. He's a blend, and therefore he's Emes. Yaakov, which is the Midah of Emes, he is the Tikkun. And we see that's what we say also in davening. We say, Hakel, HaGadol, the great God, is referring to the Midah of Avram Avinu, which is kindness. Gadol is great, is Chesed. HaGibor, the Midah of Gevura. And then when it comes to that, and to the, when we say Hanora, the awesome one, we say VeHanora. And there is a Vav, because the Vav is in the center. In that center, because there's three columns in which godly influence comes to the world. The left, the right column, which is Chesed, begins with Chachma, Chesed and Netzach. There is the left column, which is Bina, understanding, Gevura, might, and Hod, glory. There's the center column, which is Keser, the crown, Das, knowledge, Teferes, beauty, and then Yesod, foundation, and Amalchus. Teferes is right under Das, and Das is right under Teferes. Yaakov is Teferes. The Vav represents the element of Das. Yaakov is the man who feeds the Jewish people das. Yaakov and Moshe Rabbeinu, they're both the same idea. They're both das. And that's the ability to conquer Esav. In order to conquer Esav, you need the proper das. When you have the holy das, that counters, that destroys Esav, that eliminates Esav. Because the power of Esav and the power of Yishmael, the power of their corruption, is in the distortion of das. It came from the chait of the Eitz Hadas. What was the Eitz Hadas? The tree of knowledge. There was a corruption in knowledge. The knowledge of the human being was contaminated. As that knowledge is contaminated, it caused a contamination already in all the emotions and all the experiences of the human being, because the very perception of reality was contaminated. So let's understand, what is it about Yaakov that he's the ultimate pure being who represents the rectification of Das, which through that we can fix the Esav and Yishmael and bring about a tikkun in the entire world. So, mentioned earlier, we mentioned two Perushim in Eldo Toles Yitzchak, an amazing thing. One Pirush was that the offspring of Yitzchak was all, that all these offspring we were talking about earlier is in order to remove the Zayahama, the filth, until you have something very pure. The other Pirush was that the Toldos that we're talking about over here is the addition which comes through the rectification of the very Zohama, of the very filth that we've extracted. And the two Pirushim go hand in hand. Because the only way we can rectify the unholy is if we ourselves are in perfect state of rectification. In other words, had you not had a Yaakov being born, according to the Pirush of the Alshach that we said earlier, through a process of removing and extracting all the junk and all the garbage, you would never be able to have a Yaakov, a person who can transform the Klipa into Kedusha. The reason why we're able to make the negative into holiness is by first purging, first when, like the sages say, Kshayt Atzmacha, first clean yourself and then you'll be able to clean someone else. If you're sinking in the quicksand, don't try to pull someone else out of this quicksand. You can't pull them out if you yourself are in the quicksand. You have to be on firm ground and then you can pull someone else out. Yeah, there had to be established a pure being whose mind, whose das is rectified, and that's Yaakov, because all the Zuhama was taken out, and now we can deal with the Esav and Yishmael and bring about their rectification. And that's the whole purpose, because that's where the energy is. The energy is in their rectification. So now the question is, what is this idea of the rectification of the Das? So very briefly, because we're very short in time. An idea is like this. If we take a look at the sin of the Eitz HaDas, we see that what's the first result of that contamination? What is the contamination? Let's try to define the Zeham of the Noah. What is it? What did the snake put in Chava? So let's see, what was the first consequence of that act? What's the first thing the Torah tells us? Immediately after they ate from the tree of knowledge, the encounter with the snake, it says that the two Adam and Chava went to hide, because they knew, because they are naked. Now the question is, they were naked before, and they were embarrassed of God, so they went to hide. But Hashem was talking to them before that, and they were unclothed. So why are they suddenly uncomfortable? And the answer is, because they ate from the tree of knowledge. So what happened? What is the idea? The thing is, because you see a little child, a one-year-old, two-year-old child, a little toddler, is not embarrassed to run around naked. You can have guests in the house, and they're parading around without their clothing. And there's none. The parents are uncomfortable, but the children are okay. And the reason for that, what's the difference between a child and an adult? The difference is that the child doesn't have any self-consciousness. It's the self-consciousness of the adult that makes us uncomfortable in an unclothed state. Now, of course, because of our self-consciousness, which came to the world, it is the right thing. We have to be clothed. And it is sinful to be unclothed in public, right? So we have to be clothed. But the very idea that we are uncomfortable is because we have become very self-conscious. Before they ate from the tree of knowledge, they were not conscious of themselves. They were conscious of what's real. In other words, they felt the world. They felt everything around them. Primarily, they were filled with godly consciousness. And they didn't sense themselves. What do I feel? Am I cold? Am I hot? What do you think about me? What am I? Do I look good? Am I making a good impression upon you? Am I cool? Am I this? Am I nerdy? I don't know, whatever the craziness. We are so self-conscious to the point of total narcissism. We go to a wedding and we can't enjoy the wedding because we're busy thinking about, like, what do I feel? What do I look like? Have you ever when we're self-conscious, we're not really, that's really death. When a person is self-conscious, you're not experiencing anything. You're not alive. You're nowhere because you're busy thinking about yourself. If you forget about yourself, you can be one with what's happening. A child is so free, so because they're not thinking of themselves. The moment we become aware of ourselves, we become very inhibited. We become very constricted. We become very limited. And that's the idea of ego. Ego at its core is a sensation of self. I'm preoccupied with myself. I feel myself very much. And therefore, everything is important, how I am, how I'm feeling. And that's the root of every avera. It's the root of every sin. It's definitely the root of depression, of sadness. I'm sad because I'm not happy with what's going on. I'm busy with myself. It's the root of taiva. It's the root of lusts. Because I have lusts. Why do I have lusts? Something that's going to make me feel good. And I know God said no. I know this is ruining my relationship with Hashem. I know this is not good for me. In the long run, I'm going to regret it. I know it's going to cause a wedge between me and my family. If I, God forbid, if a person goes after their lusts and does immoral things, it can cause a terrible separation. It can break their marriage and their family. But at the moment that a person has a lust, and since the person is so into themselves, I need to feel good. If this makes me go, if this is going to give me a thrill of a moment, then I'm going to do that. I don't care about any of the consequences that are going to come out of it. So again, it's the deep desire for satisfaction of self. The whole world died. Nothing is important besides me and my pleasure. So one has become so important, they've become a god. I'm the purpose of my existence, my delight and my pleasure. How about Esav's klipa, the klipa of rage, the klipa of animosity, of abuse, of hatred, whatever else, a murderer? What is that? What means a person murders someone? Murder someone means, what do you mean? I am, you're nobody. I feel only myself. And you're in my way, God forbid, I'll kill you. I'll remove you. You have no right to live. What do you mean you're taking someone's life? What do you mean? You're in my way. You're taking something, you're threatening me. What do you mean? I'm angry at you. I'm going to get back at you. You're my competitor. How dare you try to compete with me? I'm like the mafia. Anybody who tries to compete with them, they'll blow his brains out. Because it's an ultimate, it's ego, it's me, I'm everything. And that's the, okay, we're not, you know, we don't deal with challenge of murdering anybody, but our own way in which we can lash out and hurt another person. Because of what? Because you messed with me. It's again, it's coming from this and the self-consciousness. So self-consciousness is the root of every klipa, reishis goyim amalek. Amalek is that intense consciousness of self, which came in as the result of the das. Now what then should I feel? If I don't feel me, who then should I feel? I am me. Why shouldn't I feel me? The answer is, you're not you. The Eibishter is you. God is you. God is the source of all of existence. God brings existence ex nihilo from absolute nothingness every second. And therefore, my first primal feeling needs to be Eibishter. God. God created me. He created the world. He created everything. My first thought always has to be, what am I here for? See, when we say elimination of ego, we don't mean becoming a shmata, becoming a piece, becoming a rag, becoming nothing. We mean, instead of the feeling of I am and everything is for me, it's I of course I am. I'm very important, but I'm an important servant. There is a service that I need to provide. There is someone who created me, and he has a purpose in my creation, and I need to serve that purpose. Of course I feel good about myself. God created me. He could have created a billion others, but he didn't create those billion others, but he could have created me. He created other people as well, but who knows how many other innovations God could have had. His mind is infinite, but he didn't. He created me as a person that he needs in the creation. That's unbelievable responsibility. That's an incredible feeling of confidence. God has confidence in me. He created me, but it's purpose, and I respect your purpose because you too are created by God, and you're just as important as me in your mission, what you need to do. And I can respect every creature and every creation, and every moment it's to serve, not to be served. That's the holy. But we need to, in order to have, and that's called bittul, the opposite of ego, bittul, nullification, surrender to Hashem. If I have a desire that's unholy, it's irrelevant. So I want. Who cares what I want? Does Hashem want this? Is this the right thing to do? Is this what I was created for? So what happens if you did something to me? So what? Who am I? Who do you think I am? I'm just a servant, and you're just as have rights to be to traverse this planet just like me. So what replaces ego is das. When we have das in God, das means a powerful conviction and sensation of Hashem, that we feel Him. See, it's not enough intellect. We all know there is a God. And we all know Hashem is here and Hashem is there. Hashem is everything. It's one thing to know, it's another thing to feel. When you have das, you feel it. It's in your mind so strong to the point that you can really recognize it and feel it, then automatically all the emotions are rectified. There's no unholy love, there's unholy fear. Our job is to bring das into the world. Through das, we purify all of creation. Yaakov Avinu was the one of perfect in das. Why? Because, as we said earlier, we had all the klipa removed from Avram. And we have, what was Avram's avoda? How did Avram come? How did we get to the perfect man of das? The man of emes, the man of truth. Yaakov Ishtam. How? Avram went through 10 nisyonos, 10 tests. What are the idea of nisyonos? He's breaking his ego for God. Every type of comfort, every time there was a clash between I am, my comfort, my will, with Hashem's will, he surrendered it. So there was total self-abnegation. Again and again and again, and major things, major wars, and he eliminated all ego. And then Yitzhak was born, and Yitzhak stretched out his neck, willing to give his very being for God. A young man who had the whole world for him. And everything he would give up, total Mesiras Nefesh, that set the stage. That Yaakov Avinu was born, and he was born with the genes. He was born already with that purity of total Mesiras Nefesh, of total bittul, of total powerful recognition of Hashem. The Das was completely rectified in Yaakov. Once Yaakov had rectified Das, Gemara says that the Jewish people also had a rectification of their Das, because, you see, we are all descendants of Yaakov, but we, the children, too, had to go through a purification. Because Yaakov, the others were a different kind of neshamas. They're neshamas on a higher realm. The children are lower neshamas, and they also needed a purification. Our purification, the sages say, when did our zihama, our filth, stop from the children, from the Jewish people, when they stood at Har Sinai? Because that was the purpose. Why when we stood at Har Sinai? Because it says that the Golus Mitzrayim, the exile of Egypt, why did God bring about, there's no sin, simply. The Mefarshim have a hard time trying to find maybe a sin that the Jewish people did. What sin did we do that we deserve to go to Egypt for 210 years? The answer is it's not a sin. It's part of the purification process. Ego needed to be eliminated. To be a servant of God, you needed to remove. You had to come and break the I am and the I need and the I want, and it's my life, and I do with my life as I wish, what makes me comfortable, what makes me good. That needed to be broken. Well, 210 years of brutal slavery in which you didn't do what you wanted. You served a power bigger than you. Of course, it was a corrupted power, but it served the purpose of breaking their ego. The Jewish people were broken, but only the klipa was broken. Internally, they were healthy. They came out of Mitzrayim, and they stood at Har Sinai. And especially when they came to Har Sinai, there was a revelation of God at Har Sinai that swept away any shadow of doubt. Hashem was so powerfully felt at Har Sinai. They saw Hashem from the heaven, from the earth, from all four sides. They saw that all of existence is permeated with God. Ein oid mavado mamish. There's nothing but Hashem. And they saw it so crystal clear. Their das was fully, 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 fully constructed, fully built up. That's why the Kolbay says an amazing thing. We say in that, we say b'agada, we say ilu karvano lefnei Har Sinai v'lo nasan lano es haTorah. If God, you would have brought us to Har Sinai, you would have not given us the Torah, dayenu, that would have been enough, sufficient. The question is, what do you mean? Bring us to Har Sinai, not give us the Torah? Bring us to Har Sinai, not give us the Torah? So what's the point of coming to Har Sinai if they didn't give us the Torah? Wasn't the whole point of coming to Har Sinai to give us the Torah? And the answer is, so the Kolbay says, one of the Rishonim, if you would have brought us to Har Sinai and it would have been Paska Zehamasam, our filth would have been removed from us, similar to Yaakov Avinu. As a result of the purging of Egypt and the display of Achdus Hashem, of divine unity, as the Kolbay says, they removed all suffix, every tiny shadow of a doubt that there was any other power in the world but Hashem. So when we came to that clarity, that would have been Dayenu, even if the Torah would not be given to us. Just that experience itself, the purification, the rectification, would have been enough. Now, however, that we have Yaakov and we have the Jewish people. Now the avoda is to start rectifying the klipa. See, we are prone to be clean to begin with, because as we said earlier, we come from the world of tikkun. Our neshamas were always from a holy place. It's only that we too were a little trapped in klipa because of the sin of the Eitz Hadas. So we needed cleansing. But the nations, Esav and Yishmael and the Gentile nations and generally the world at large, is not coming. They don't have that head start, don't have that godly soul that is prone, that is conditioned to be egoless, to be surrendered, to be a servant. They don't have that kind of a neshama. They're very deeply rooted in ego, because that's what the klipa is all about. That's what caused as a shattering of the vessels, disconnecting from God. And if you disconnect from God, you become God. That's what Esav is. Esav is a yesh. He says, yesh li rav, I have so much. I'm a yesh. Instead of ayin, he's yesh. Our job is to fix Esav. And that's why, so the amazing thing is that the Torah, you got to wonder. You see, God goes and he gives the Torah, he offers the Torah both to Esav and to Yishmael. And you wonder, Ibishta, excuse me, what are you doing? You want to give the Torah to the Jewish people. The Torah was created for the Jewish people. No, Hashem created the world for the Torah and for the Israel. What's God going and giving the Torah? Where's Hashem taking the Torah to Esav and Yishmael? What's he doing? And what's going to happen if they say yeah? Imagine if they said yeah. It reminds me of the peace process. We, very smart people, the Jewish people, are willing to make concessions and give everything away. God makes a miracle that the Palestinians, the Arabs, don't want it. They say no to our offers. It's a miracle. Well, what would happen if the Esav and Yishmael, that miracle wouldn't have happened? And Esav and Yishmael would have said yes. And the Torah would have been given to them. The answer is, the main idea of mitzvahs is to make a tikkun in the world. Now we're talking about mitzvahs, and we have to differentiate. I'm just saying, say the main purpose of Torah and mitzvahs is to fix the world. We mean the mitzvahs and the Torah as they are enclosed in physicality. There is the mitzvahs and the Torah in their essence, in their spiritual source. There's something else. Talking about the mitzvahs given to this world was to fix the world, to fix the gashmis of the world. Every mitzvah does a tikkun. Every mitzvah extracts sparks. Every mitzvah has an elevation in the world. So therefore, it's mainly meant to rectify those who need rectification, and that is Esav and Yishmael. So Hashem went to give the Torah to them. To Esav. Similar to Yitzchak giving the brachas first to Esav, offering, wanting to do the brachas to Esav. But then it doesn't happen. Why? Because Esav can't handle the Torah on his own. He can't apply it. Because in order to be able to learn the Torah and do the mitzvahs to bring that rectification, you need to be in a state of bittul yourself. Because you have to have something within you, a little space of, a little nekuda, a point within you which is bittul. And from that nekuda, you can struggle with the other side that does not bittul. But Esav doesn't have that nekuda of bittul because he's full of ego, he's full of beingness. That's why it's given the task to the Jewish people that they didn't want the Torah. And why didn't God offer? He knew they wouldn't want it. But he wanted them to admit that they can't fix themselves. He wanted them to concede to go to therapy. I can't, as a person, sometimes believe that he can fix his problem. And people tell him, you can't fix your problem. You need to see a therapist. And the guy is an auction. He's stubborn. And you can't fix him. You need to go to a doctor. He doesn't want to go to a doctor. I'm okay. Esav and Yishmael have to say, we can't. The Torah, we can't. You're giving us mitzvahs that require us to surrender who we are. We can't do that. So then Hashem takes it back to the Jewish people and says, now you will do the tikkun on Esav and on Yishmael. Now that tikkun on Esav and Yishmael, let's understand, as we said earlier, it's not so much that we speak to Esav and we work with Yishmael. We haven't been proselytizers, or whatever that word is, in trying to affect the nations. Even though Rambam says it is a commandment for the Jewish people to teach the nations Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. For most of our history, the seven Noahide laws, for most of history we couldn't do it. Because we would have been... You know, we were happy that the non-Jews leave us alone. We didn't come mess with them and tell them what our religion says, what our faith says. We wouldn't do that. But today's days, it is a mitzvah for us to do it. We could. The world is actually waiting for us to talk and not be shy, not be bashful. And if we try to teach, we see we're successful. Many people, there's many movements of Noahide Jews, which Jews have been influencing non-Jews, a very powerful thing, important thing. But the main idea over here is the rectification of Esav and Yishmael takes place within us. Because when we're faced within ourselves with the klipas of Esav and Yishmael, which means, we said earlier, all impure lusts, desires, passions, all come from Yishmael. And all rage, anger, animosity, and hatred comes in a unholy way, all comes from Esav. And when we're faced with these desires and wants, we have to know that these are really, it's not really the Jew in us. It's us, but it's not the Jew in us. It's the Esav and Yishmael that's embedded in our souls, which God is putting inside our being so that we can fix ourselves. And when we fix ourselves, we have a universal impact. When I have a taiva, when I have a desire to pursue some kind of, to look at something negative, to sin, to do, and I don't do it, it's a perverted love, it's a perverted attraction, a perversion energy within me, and I say, no, that's not what Hashem wants of me, I'm causing a purification in the entire Arab world. And when I do and I don't, and I hold back from lashing back out at someone, from yelling at someone, from hurting someone, whatever it is that I want to do, or taking revenge, and I don't do that, I'm weakening Esav. I'm changing Esav. And that's the transformation. And that all comes from the Das of Yaakov. Ve'ela told us Yaakov, we have Yaakov, Ish Emes, the man of Das. He has the Vav, and he can bring that rectification. How are we doing in the world? How are we doing in this rectification? How are we impacted? We're ready by the days of Mashiach. What has happened with Esav and Yishmael? Well, we look in the world, we see it's pretty awesome. Take a look at what has happened to Esav. The Jewish people split really into two groups. It's likely to say that the Sephardim went into the world into the Muslim domain and traveled the Middle Eastern countries where Yishmael was strong, and the Ashkenazim went into the world of Esav. And here's what we see. Take a look what happens in Esav's lands. Esav is a new Esav. First of all, the American non-Jew, the Christian American, is a very decent human being. A human being that wants to do the right thing. A human being that's devoted to righteousness, to kindness, full of charity and goodness. The best friends of Israel. Okay, we don't know what's in everybody's heart, but in general, we see these are the biggest supporters of holiness in the world. Is the American, and it's most of the American nation. Most. It's a pure Esav. How about Esav, the ancient Esav, Esav in Europe? Well, take a look at the miracles that are happening before Mashiach comes. The big brute Esav, the Soviet Union, Russia, denier of God. Arch enemy of the Jewish people, destroying, seeking to destroy, to wipe out any trace of God and the trace of the Jewish people, transformed themselves. Just in 1990, the Soviet Union came down, and it happened miraculously. The government changed itself without a war, without one bullet fired. Probably the greatest miracle in history. A revolution like that in the past would have taken so long, would have taken 100 years, and there would have been so much bloodshed, and here it happened so quickly, and it happened from within and without any bloodshed. A transformation. Freedom was given to a country. Liberty. People can learn Torah, do mitzvahs. Of course, there's corruption, and nothing is perfect yet. Too much. But we're talking about, look at the trend in the world. And then let's take a look at the world of Yishmael. Yishmael seems to be catching up. It just started recently. But we're seeing major, major transformations in the Arab countries. Tyrants are being overthrown. People are looking for liberty, even in Egypt. You know, people thought, oh, well, it was better with Mubarak. He was at least in peace with Israel, yeah. And then, well, who came in? It was the Muslim Brotherhood. But that's not. It looked that way for a half a year, for a year or so. But look, they were overthrown, and people that are looking for a truer life, for a better form of life. And that change is really taking place. Of course, it's not perfect until the Shofar Shel Mashiach, but we're seeing the change taking place both in the Arab world and in the Jew, and in the Esav world, because of our purification and our rectification of Esav, of our mitzvahs that we've done in the lands of Esav and the lands of Yishmael, and the battles that we fight and the overcoming of our Yetzaharis that we have, that brings a purification. So we know that we're not just fighting for ourselves, we're fighting for the entire world. May Hashem bring us to the moment when we're going to see the Eila Toldos Yitzchak, the real birth of Yitzchak, Yaakov and Esav, and that's the meaning what Rashi says, Yaakov ve'Esav ha'amurim b'parsha. Our job is to take Esav and pick him up from his corrupted, fallen state and bring him back into the parsha. We have to bring him into the parsha, the Torah Esav, the Esav that Yitzchak sees, the Esav that is with all his holy potential. When we do that, ve'ela, we add a vav through Yaakov, drawing down the oires de tohu, the lights of tohu, bekelim de tikkun, in the vessels of tikkun, and we experience ultimate light and ultimate bliss and everlasting joy forever and ever. Thank you.